Hello, everyone, and a very warm welcome. I'm Craig. I'm chair of the Marketing Society, and it's a great pleasure to be here today to host our Innovating Creativity at Speed webinar. We brought this together with our friends at Vice Media Group. Now, I'm sure you all agree these have been a challenging last few months, and during that time, many of us have been changing. We've been pivoting, reframing and embracing the opportunities that are around us to change our business models and ensure that our businesses thrive long into the future. Now, and part of that is making tough decisions, of course, but it's also about embracing and grasping the opportunities that we see to innovate, to be more creative, and to do things faster. Because whilst difficult times can be really challenging, and these really are, they can also push us to achieve better results. So in this session, we're going to be talking about just that, how brands are innovating their creative process at speed during this pandemic to deliver work that cuts through and really stands out from the crowd like it never has. Now, as always, with all of our events, we encourage interactivity. So please feel free to use the chat function throughout the session. But for specific questions for our panel, please use the Q&A function. Let us know if your question is for a specific contributor. And please keep your questions pithy, please. No speeches, so that we can ask as many as possible. So let's just test the chat is working first, I think. So if everyone can just get on the chat, tell us who you are, where you're dialing in from, and how you're feeling today in one word. We can just get to know each other a little bit before we start proper. I'm not seeing much interactivity so far. Come on, guys, wake up. Here we go. There's Tom. Well done, Tom. Tom's joining us from England. How are you feeling, Tom, in one word? Laura from Amsterdam's joined us. Oh, Tom's feeling knackered. He's just done a run. Well, it's very honest, Tom. Thank you for that. Hope you're not too sweaty. Sharon from Chelsea FC is feeling positive. Thank you, Sharon. We've got Anna from Manchester, feeling ready to learn something new. Great stuff. Alistair in Dubai is feeling weekend ready already. That's a bit early, isn't it, Alistair? Marcus in London's making lunch. What are you having for your lunch, Marcus? Something interesting, I hope. And we've got Pawan from Dubai who's feeling excited, and so it goes on. Saffron's feeling curious. Feels chilly and wet. Okay, the rain's heading towards me here in London. So the chat is definitely working. It looks like you've all woken up, which is great. So keep using that as we go through the session as you see fit, if you want to chat to each other. Right, I think we'll get started. So it's my great pleasure to welcome our panelists who will introduce themselves. So first up, let's say hi to Rob Newlin, who is Global President of Vertu Worldwide.
Hey, good afternoon, Craig. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? And how are you feeling?
Yeah, very well. Very well, thank you. Calling from a slightly grey London as well, waiting for that storm to come through. So looking forward to the discussion today. Like you said, I'm a president of Vertu Worldwide, so agency born out of Vice, and have also sort of across the years came out of leading all the creative agency groups for Facebook and Instagram, and setting those up around the world. And then also before that was a client for many years, including at Diageo, where Mark is now as well.
So poacher and gamekeeper. So some interesting insights from that. So let's now welcome, we're going to go to Singapore now and welcome Lynette Pang, who is CMO of Singapore Tourism Board. Hi, Lynette.
Hi, a warm hello from evening time in Singapore. Hi, everybody.
And how are you doing? How are you feeling today?
Well, it's my second shift and I'm trying to be energetic.
You seem energetic to me.
It's the coffee and not the champagne.
You might need something stronger, who knows, after this. Now, talking of something stronger, last but certainly not least is our final panelist, who is Mark Sandys. And Mark Sandys has quite possibly the best title in the world. He is global head of beer, Baileys, Smirnoff, and Captain Morgan, that's greedy, at Diageo. Hi, Mark.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks very much for having me. I'm in Dublin, and unusually, it sounds like the weather is better here than over with you in London today. The sun is shining.
And how are you feeling?
Very good. Really looking forward to the session today. And actually, I can see a few familiar names on the Zoom today.
Good. Right. You're ready to get started? Yeah.
Yep.
Good. So listen, as I touched on earlier, this year has obviously thrown up a host of new challenges for us all. It's forced us all to find new ways of working, to adapt our businesses, and also managing our teams and key relationships in quite different ways. So I wanted to start by asking you all, what has been the single biggest challenge that you faced during this time? And if it's okay with you, I'll start with you, Mark.
That's great. Well, the timing of when lockdown happened, from a Guinness perspective, which is the largest of the brands that I look after, it basically happened in our biggest week of the year, middle of March in most places around the world, as pubs and bars all over the world are preparing for St. Patrick's Day. And we had, as with normal years, we had a St. Patrick's Day film shot and edited and ready to go. It was all about people going out and celebrating together. And of course, in those first few days, we had to kind of take stock. And the first thing that happened, our amazing team in the US re-edited that film to turn it from a film encouraging people to go out and celebrate to a film encouraging people to stay home and to look forward to the time when they would be able to celebrate again in the future. And then I suppose in the weeks and months that followed, I don't know if you all felt this, it seemed like consumers' mood, the public mood, kind of changed almost every week. And it was a real lesson for us in trying to sort of listen out and adapt to what we needed to be doing at that stage. From the start, we went into a phase of supporting the industry, which is facing a huge amount of challenge at the moment, investing to support bartenders and pubs that were closed. And also across Diageo, we went from making spirits to making hand sanitizer in all our distilleries. But one of the things that was really interesting was then watching the way that people kind of started to play around with Guinness online in a few different ways. We saw a great young Irish creative director called Luke O'Reilly did a sort of Guinness ad in answer to a competition of, you know, what would be ads that would successfully encourage people to stay home. And it was so good. We then, with his credits, then launched that ad. And we saw lots of people playing around with different ways to pour Guinness at home and dreaming of, the time when they could get back in the pub and actually have a pint of Guinness again. And I think probably, you know, the biggest challenge about all this actually led to the single biggest investment that we've ever made in Guinness. I've worked on Guinness pretty much for 23 years now. The single biggest investment that we've ever made in Guinness was all those kegs of beer that were out in the pubs and bars in time for St. Patrick's Day. We took them back, destroyed them, sent out fresh beer, cleaned all the lines, because we wanted to make sure that experience that people have been dreaming of being able to get back out with their friends and have a pint of Guinness as a mark of that, was going to be the most amazing experience, the best pint of Guinness they could ever possibly have. And so it was interesting that as much as all of the, we had to find new ways of working together and connecting and so on, actually there was a real sort of back to basics moment of ensuring just, you know, the quality of the experience, the quality of the product was going to live up to people's hopes and aspirations as we started to emerge from lockdown.
So it was a real conduit for change then, positive change actually in many ways. And at some length to go to though, to take all of the Guinness out just to make sure that people get the perfect pint when they're back. That's quite remarkable. Lynette, can we turn to you? What was your biggest challenge during this time?
Wow, so many challenges, but I think one of the key challenges would be the constantly changing environment. And we're not talking about months or weeks or days. You could have a day, and in the span of every 10 minutes, something would change. There'll be new information. And I think it gets even more acute when you're a global organization and you have many markets to look after, and every market is changing by the minute. So the question is, how do you get the right information, and how do you formulate the right strategies, and how do you address the needs of consumers and communicating effectively fast? So it was really trying to understand and make sense of a very fast-changing environment, and we needed to also adjust and adapt. I mean, being in an organization that's quite large, where we pride ourselves on quant analysis and understanding the business and formulating a very cogent strategy, here we had, it's changing, it's changed again. You know, we need to do something fast, we need to get it out. Oh, consumers are feeling that way, that's an interesting opportunity, let's do something there. So it was really, how do you work with your team across the world to keep them on point, to make sure that information was fluid and yet that we adapt quickly. So, yeah.
Well, it'll be great
to see the challenges.
Some of the examples of that as we go through the next sort of 40 minutes or so.
Sure.
But as you say, it was just changing. I mean, marks are changing weekly. I think it might even have been more regular than that, that the consumers were changing. But and Rob, what about you? Slightly different perspective from agency world, perhaps, in terms of the challenges that you faced.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the single biggest challenge is keeping the teams happy, safe, motivated. When you look at that, the most obvious points is making sure that everybody, as they switch from a moment where you relish from the intensity of working together to being able to adapt to that moment and say, well, this is wonderful as well, wonderful but different, as far as being able to being a part and how you build a borderless network in that way to make sure you're moving ideas around, but also just making sure that everybody is happy and safe and well. I agree with Lynette. I think the biggest challenge is for everybody is around the adaptability. And what was fascinating about that, of course, is we were seeing waves of change going on around the world. And as you had one market in one situation, we had another market in a radically different situation. And that meant we probably saw that initial burst of intensity that came in of, right, we need to understand, like Mark was saying, how do we take assets or take work that we're about to do, stop it, change it, build something new? What do we do to make sure we react quickly? That pause to say, well, what does it mean of how do we emerge in 6-8 weeks time? And then also that sort of that view through to a medium term of, well, how do we exist in this new world? So we were seeing waves of those different start points coming from around the world. And being able to help have the teams working and supporting one another, being able to say, hey, this is what we saw at this stage, was really useful to help people adapt and move towards it. But I think it's been challenging for clients and the agency world, and making sure that normal timelines have been collapsed and moved in different ways. But I also think this is something that we shouldn't lose, is that adaptability should be at the core of the way in which we necessarily must work going forward. So I think it's also brought a lot of lessons.
Yeah. Well, talking of lessons, I think with challenge comes learning, right? And I guess that would be my sort of next question for you. So what's your biggest learning to date? And maybe Lynette, we can start with you.
I think in terms of the process in my organization, it's very important to be very data-driven, to be very insights-driven, to have great clarity on what the business problem is. So it's a process of learning, and it's iterative in formulating a strategy. So I think the greatest learning for the entire team has been, in this situation, speed trumps perfection. And that has been a hard lesson and has been an interesting lesson, and it has been fun as well, because I think we had to let go of certain paradigms and ways of working and to pick up new skills. And I would imagine, you know, that had implications on how we work as a team in terms of reviewing the process, and also in terms of how we work, the terms of engagement with the agencies. For them, of course, in terms of our partners, it meant that deadlines and timelines were shortened. Campaigns that would have taken perhaps, you know, 3 months or a month in terms of a global launch, it would be, okay, let's get something out in 3 days. Or, you know, we need to get something out tonight.
Yeah, and yeah. Do you think that's a change that will stick for the long term?
I beg your pardon?
Do you think those changes, so the move to a much faster process, do you think that's something that will stick for the long term?
Definitely. I think definitely will change. But I think when we come out of this pandemic, there'll be two ways of working. It doesn't mean we throw away the old. There's still a lot of merit in really analyzing the situation. But in terms of executing, we need to be fast. So it's a balance of the two, I would say.
What about you, Mark?
I really recognize what Lynette says about speed beating perfection. And I think for us, it kind of accelerated some things that we've maybe talked about in the past of areas in which we'd like to see the culture change, but suddenly, you know, the circumstances forced it to happen. And one of those for us is kind of moving away from the neatness of an annual plan with an annual budget and knowing what your assets are going to be and what the calendar is going to be. And instead having this more, I suppose, kind of real-time marketing of having to be ready to respond to the changing times. And I can see a couple of things with that, that now as we've been doing this for about maybe 5 or 6 months, I can feel some people yearning for the certainty of, where is my annual plan now? And can you tell me what are we going to do for Christmas? What are we going to do afterwards? And of course, actually, I do think this is something that's going to stick of the power of not giving ourselves those kind of artificial boundaries, but being ready to respond. That said, there is, I think, a risk about it that it draws us into being overly short term. About a decade ago, I was lucky enough to work in Russia for 3 years, and life in Moscow was volatile. Things changed rapidly. One of the things I learned there is at one stage, we became a business that was really good at dealing with crises. But we only really evolved as a business when we also had a sense of where we wanted to go over the medium term as well. So that as we sort of navigated our way from crisis to crisis, it was in pursuit of a well illustrated vision and direction. And I think that's a balance that we're going to have to get now as well. We don't have certainty about how things are going to play out, particularly in the industry that I'm in or that Lynette's in. But we do need to make sure that our short-term actions are still in direction of the vision of where we want to go.
Yeah, so it's in service of something. So you need the North Star and maybe a framework to work within, but with the flexibility to execute much more speedily.
Absolutely.
Makes sense. What about you, Rob?
I mean, I think it's probably in service of that as well. I think we saw very quickly that, yes, you needed to react, and yes, you needed to have teams ready to go and change and build, but you also needed to make sure that you were looking up and looking out, and the need ever more to make sure that you're understanding where things were going. And again, taking maybe different sources for insight generation. But I think our strategists have never been busier or more required. And also, again, as a connected network, we're never more useful than being able to say to share learnings and understanding. To be able to make sure that you could formulate, because I think what we saw was very reactive moments and sometimes very open briefs. And I think as we got better and just, I think, very quickly moved into really fantastic relationships with our clients, where actually solidifying the brief well, even at speed, was very necessary to make sure what you were pointing at, because there were so many different ways in which you could point an answer. So I think that was interesting. And the insight generation and the forward looking insight generation was very, very important and will continue to be. And no one has a crystal ball and no one will know the solid answer. But I think these understanding markers at these moments and then getting sharp about what you're asking also allows for speed, not just being generating lots of ideas and just sort of throwing them out into the ether and wasting lots of time, because time becomes ever more valuable as we're building at this pace.
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting time, isn't it? Because I think you're all saying that there's a focus on the short term and doing things much better, more efficiently, much speedier. But also businesses are facing, I mean, existential questions in many ways, you know, in terms of what they're going to be in the future. And so that requires some real strategic long-term thinking. Fascinating times. I want to switch now a bit more to focusing specifically on innovation and creativity. And Lynette, if I can start with you, just I'd like you to tell us a bit about how you've harnessed creativity during the pandemic to keep Singapore front of mind.
Well, a couple of things. Where I come from, the partnership with the wider ecosystem, the wider travel ecosystem is important. So that's one consideration. Of course, the partnership with our creative agencies and our agencies is very important. So one major piece of work that we've sort of finessed and fine-tuned and launched during this period is really how we work with the community of creators and the larger travel industry to harness their creativity. So apart from working for agencies on putting out work, and I can talk quite a fair bit about that, it was also thinking through how can we work with the creative sector in Singapore to tell the Great Singapore story. So one of the things we did was to set up a fund, to set up a Singapore Stories Creative Fund that creators, whether you're a filmmaker, you're a content maker, you know, you're a great photographer, that you can tap on. And if you've got a great story in whatever medium, you can tell that story. So I think in today's world, creativity has been, it's more democratic. It doesn't just belong to the brand, right? If the brand is to represent the people, then you need to let the people tell the story. So that has been one element that we've been honing and thinking about. The other piece, of course, is with the agency. You know, we are usually very very particular about a good brief. But I think what this is pandemic has taught us is there needs to be some freedom within the framework, where there could be faster conversations, more casual conversations, more brainstorming to get something out and fast. It doesn't need to be too formal. So, and also creativity, it doesn't just belong to a single team or to a single agency. The creative process and the ideation and the ideas can come from many different parts of the marketing ecosystem. So yeah, does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah, it does. There's some great insights there. Now, I should just say, I'm going to another question in a minute, but I should just say that on the Q&A to our panelists, there's a couple of quite specific questions for Mark and Lynette at the minute. So if you feel able to multitask, feel free to answer in writing those. I'm not sure we're going to get to them. It's a particularly long one for you, Mark. So have a look at that whilst we're going. And actually, Mark, whilst we're talking to you, I think, I mean, Diageo is well known for its innovations right at the core of the business. Can you tell us a bit more about why it's so important to Diageo and the values that have guided you over this sort of period that have allowed you to make the sort of big, brave decisions around creativity?
Yeah, I mean, it really does sit at the heart of the kind of philosophy of Diageo, that our brands are in the entertainment business, and that therefore the best way for us to bring our brands to life is by creating an emotional connection that so many people have, because they associate their favorite night out with their friends, their favorite time they've had people over to their house, that our brands are present in those moments and help to mark those moments. And certainly on Guinness in particular, it's something that, you know, it goes all the way back in the history of Guinness, of Arthur Guinness deciding he was going to brew black beer when the rest of the world was brewing ale. There's something about that Guinness doing things in a way that is different from anyone else. And we have this expression that we write on all of our briefs, which is OGCD, which means only Guinness can do. And really, it's a sort of standard or a threshold that if actually the response, whether it is a piece of communication or a below the line activation, if you can picture it being done by a different beer brand or indeed by a different other kind of brand, then it's not quite right for Guinness. You know, that's it's quite a tough benchmark, because one of the things that it leads you to do is often have to constantly recreate and reinvent. And at times, I feel sometimes in the past when we've had a hugely successful piece of communications, like, for example, the Surfer ad all the way back in 1999, or more recently, the Surpers ad in 2015, we fall into this trap of thinking, oh, there's a model from this ad. I can, you know, there's a model as to why this works, and we can follow that model and recreate it. And as soon as you start doing that, it's never quite the same again. It takes a huge amount of trust to be able to constantly be driving change and that level of searching for a new expression. And I actually think that's one of the reasons why, having a long-term relationship, we're 22 years with BBDO, that really matters, because you have partners that you can, that you know really get the brand, are just as much guardians of it as any of the people that actually work for Diageo, for Guinness. And they understand that the path forward for us is about constantly reinventing and finding fresh narratives for Guinness.
Yeah. So you set yourself a very high bar, clearly. And I can sort of see it's slightly paradoxical, because we're also talking about, perfection, not trumping speed. And so I'm sure that's brought up some challenges for you over that the course of these last few months. Rob, switching to how you have been supporting your clients during this time as they've been pivoting and changing their business models, how has that felt over the course of the pandemic?
Yeah, again, to sort of echo Mark's point there as well, I think this idea of an entertainment mindset, moving from a marketing mindset to an entertainment mindset, I think is a really important move within sort of the industry overall. And hopefully it was something we were seeing come through outside of sort of the necessity driven from pandemic. And I think that's entertainment in its purest terms, as far as seeking value exchange between people and brands instead of just sort of interrupting. So would I seek it out? So again, thinking about those questions, would I seek it out? Would I queue for it? Would I pay for it when I tell people about it? How do we make sure that the markers of the work that we're creating are competing with a sea of astonishing creativity that's going on at the moment all around the world? And also at the same time, understanding other factors that are going on as far as collapsing of traditional funnels. So things like, we were working with Cholula Hot Sauce in the US. We were about to go live with a campaign at the beginning of lockdown that quickly switched into being something which was about a fundraising for restaurants and became a tackathon. And we were able to work with talent and build something which was entertaining, which was interesting, and work really well against the demands that were coming through right then and there. Working with the Dubai Tourism Authority and working with them to build out, say, music video content that really expresses well the city and shows the landscape and what goes on behind it. But at the core of it is making sure that there are business goals, there are key business sort of demands that we place on this, but the value of the creativity and the work that you're putting out there is that you would put it against other sort of other entertainment and you would actually actively seek it out. So I think that's true. And we have many different examples through lockdown of where we were helping look at some of the switches, say with Urban Decay in China and the demands to drive people through to Tmall. And so from an e-commerce play, but we were shooting a sort of advertising through lockdown, shooting it down WeChat as well and streaming in. Like lots of different sort of mechanics to it. But ultimately, this is making sure that we're reframing the demands on creativity today which I think is a wonderful challenge for the industry at large and from a client sort of in general.
Rob, whilst you're there and talking, I think I'm just going to take one of the questions from the Q&A, which I think you will like answering. So it's about the democratization of creativity. So it's from Simon Suto, and he's saying, how did the panel feel about the democratization of creativity? Does it lead to a loss of control? What's your thoughts on that?
I don't, you look at something like Gymshark in the UK, which has just been valued at a £1 billion business and has been built off of influencer marketing. And I think it, and a lot of intelligence and great products, but I think there are really interesting demands on the industry and where creativity comes from. I think the demands on making sure that you have craft and that you have people working with a great range of influence and ideas means that you get to far more interesting work. And I think we're at an interesting time in the industry where the craft and the thinking that comes from traditional advertising and from great upstream thinking and providing wonderful platforms to build brilliant creative from is really, really important. But the voices that influence that and those who, and some of the craft of how you bring that to life, well, you know what, like we need to think into that entertainment mindset again. We need to think in how you deploy it in sort of in a different way. So I think these range of voices are important, but unnecessarily shift the industry and shift some of the old guard out.
Any thoughts on that from Matt or Mark?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we did our first proper foray into, we worked with a partner called Tribal that several of you might know of. When we found ourselves in lockdown and unable to do a normal shoot, and also finding we didn't really have any assets for people to about drinking Guinness at home, and suddenly needed to find a way. And it was a really energizing process, and it was very quick. It was able to be done within the constraints, and it brought in some different voices that we don't normally work with. And I think it also broke down a little bit some of the walls between the agency and the client, you know, not least because they were each operating it out of their kitchens, and we all learnt a lot, and everyone felt very engaged in that process. I do think, and Simon is a good ex-Diageo man, and will know well. One of the constraints for us is around as an industry that is that we set our own regulation quite high, and therefore ensuring that work that is done that's consumer generated, that still fits within the Diageo marketing code, it can be a challenge at times. And that's one of the areas where control is helpful to us. But I start off my day every day by just searching hashtag Guinness, hashtag Baileys, hashtag Captain Morgan on Twitter and then on Instagram. And what you see from that isn't necessarily people kind of creating content as such, but it's how people are choosing to mark their moments with our brands. And I find it always tells a story. The story changes with the seasons, with what's going on, but it's one of the great sources of insight, I think, of just being able to see the way that people are interacting.
Funny enough, just talking about that, one of the questions on the Q&A is from Saffron Inkster, which is, how do you think customer expectations have changed as a result of the pandemic? You want to just pick that one up?
Hi, Lynette. I'm just going to jump on something that Rob said and tie it back to customer expectations. I think even more so in the pandemic, especially when you know, there were certain periods across many different markets, you know, everyone's in a different timeline. In terms of being stuck at home and locked down at home, where brands really had to create pull content because people were getting bored easily and yet they wanted to be entertained. So the point you made, Rob, about marketing having to pivot to become entertainment, was really, really critical. And that's where I think when you talk about the, you know, making sure that creativity can come from many different places and from many different part of the marketing ecosystem or the entertainment ecosystem. And I think with constraints comes creativity. So for example, one of the things we asked ourselves was, you know, we can't have events anymore, right? So how then do we bring the event or the experience of an event to folks around the world? Can we have a food festival? Sounds a bit crazy, but we just did. We had a food festival. We delivered food. We had food tours. So that has forced us to create fun content and hopefully to draw audiences in a different way. So I think how we view marketing in terms of a lot of push has forced us to be more about pull and fun, interesting, educational and entertaining content.
And has your attitude to things going wrong changed? I'm talking to really all of you, but starting with you, Lynette. Because obviously, you know, an inherent part of being innovative is that you're pushing yourself further than you might have done before. And so in doing that, inevitably things go wrong. And indeed, many would believe that's a crucial part of learning. So for all of you really, but perhaps starting with you, Lynette, is there anything that sort of stands out for you, you think that has gone wrong that you've learned from over these last few months?
I wouldn't say gone wrong, but I think as Singapore, we love planning, right? We love order, we love planning, you know, things need to be perfect. And I think when the pandemic hit, we went into planning mode, you know, beautiful frameworks, you know, framing of, you know, when are you going to launch this? And then it slowly dawned on us that this pandemic was different in every single market across the world. And then we had to really, really stick to, you know, a dictum that we hold ourselves by, which is freedom in a framework. So we had to have a very cogent framework, but enough freedom in it so that there was a lot of flexibility to move. And that was a learning for us. It was a big learning, and we're still learning.
Good, good. What about you, Rob? You've obviously had to totally change the way that you produce work and people in multiple locations around the world and so on, and as you say, shooting at home and so on. What would you say are the sort of key learnings that have come out?
I suppose just that somewhat that we can. And I think what's lovely is that when you have that mindset and you have it, it is such a liberator. And going at things in a terms in which, well, we must fly X number of people around the world. We were about to fly in 250 people to an island in the Dominican Republic, and that didn't happen. But again, quickly adapting to make sure that you can do things which have no less impact, but they work in a different way. And now coming off the back of it, I would expect that to be additive going into next year versus one or the other. So it changes mindsets, and sometimes that shows some people who can't. And I think some of that is helping people learn and or helping sort of find new ways for them to sort of work within the industry. And then I think this overall as an industry, we've loved the way in which we have 4 weeks for this, 3 months for that, 5 weeks. Like we've created an armory around us or an armor around us. And that this openness, I think someone said about, you're sitting in everyone's houses. You are talking to them as they've got their kids on their laps. The humanity changed completely. So actually, mistakes were part of the fallibility that was being expressed through all of the interactions you were having. And like Lynette said, I don't think that people would actually mark things as many mistakes, but too cliche, but they were learnings that were built upon, but they were recycled very quickly. And I think some of the things that changed is things go wrong, people want to learn from them, but they often get put back in a box and never opened again. And therefore you get repeated. What has happened far faster is you've learned from, adapted and changed quicker through the process. And I think that's been really, really healthy, both for the industry, sort of the advertising side and from a client side, and that it has been done with that sort of that collective agreement, and that this is permission to go and do that.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. Just picking up on something you said there, Rob. So on the one hand, so there's a sort of positive aspect of working remotely is you get to see behind the veil, maybe, you know, see people as human beings rather than just colleagues. our stakeholders or whatever. So that's, I think that's been a great upside. Perhaps one of the other less positive things is the risk of burnout and the fact that the normal barriers between home and work have sort of been taken down. I'm maybe ask the question of you, Mark, is people being on much more, is there a risk of burnout? How do you manage that and keep your teams motivated when you're driving creativity?
No, I think there's a real risk of burnout. And it's interesting, I feel this week in particular, and this it feels like is marking a phase for a lot of people that are in my teams. It's back to school, and also the days starting to shorten, the summer's over. And actually, we're taking that as a prompt to help people get back into good habits. And I do really agree with Robert said about the kind of humanizing effect of being able to, of everyone being in the same boat and getting that little screen-shaped window into people's lives. Part of that, I think, as leaders is ensuring that people are okay to say, I need some time out. And actually, I think one of the things that I'd really encourage to everyone is just take a bit of control of your diary to the extent that you can to have gaps in, to do whatever gives you energy, which for me is taking the dogs out for a walk or doing a bit of exercise, and making sure that you prioritize that in the diary, because it's so easy to not do that. And then, as you say, the you don't have the commute to mark the start and finish of the day. And I think we've certainly seen that. I think everyone will have experienced moments of that, of either Zoom fatigue or just not having the variety in our daily lives that we normally do, where you'll go from a sort of a stand-up meeting with lots of people in it to a energizing brainstorm to to kind of some time on your own. You know, all of it is more consistently looking at the screen. So therefore, all the more important to make sure that you're managing your energies really effectively.
Yeah, very, very wise words. Thank you, Mark. So I wanted to switch tack to, we've got about 15 minutes left. So I know there's a couple of questions on the Q&A we should pick up. But Lynette, just turning our thoughts to the future, what does the future look like for you? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but tell us about how you think travel and the way people interact with travel will change. Is it going to change forever?
You know, Mark, you said something very interesting that really resonated with me. I think the beauty of being in the office is just a variety of different environments, right? It just puts you in a different mood. So I think that's the thing. It's about the experience and the variety of experience. I don't think the travel lust will ever disappear. I do think with the pandemic, I think the craving to travel has probably been made more acute. I do think the concerns and the consumer demands will change drastically. Perhaps pre-pandemic, if you think about it, you know, it was so easy to travel. It was so easy to book a flight. It was relatively cheap. It was fast. And you can just go anywhere in the world and book a flight any time of the day. That's going to change. And I think people would demand, on a hygiene level, safety. Safety is going to be bread and butter. And after that would be, because I think travel is going to be more precious and will become, I would say, more of a scarce commodity, I think people will be more thoughtful and more deliberate. They will plan more, they will demand more. And with that, I think for all of us as travel marketeers and destinations and experience creators, it's on us to really raise the bar. And it's a tough time to raise the bar because there are many constraints. The old paradigm of what watching a play is in a theater, the old paradigm of going to a club and enjoying music and a glass of champagne or beer, or dining in a restaurant. It's every experience will have to be reviewed and changed. So it's an exciting period. It's kind of like the you know, in Charles Dickens' day, it was the Industrial Revolution. We are going through a revolution right now. And I'm very hopeful that, and I'm very positive that it's a renaissance moment. I'm an optimist.
Love that. I love the idea of people being more thoughtful about travel anyway. I think perhaps the environment demands it of us. I want to switch tack to leadership now and just talk a bit about the kind of leadership we need through these times. Because I think it's clear from everything that you've been saying is that fundamentally relationships and particularly trust are key and have been key over these last few months to creative and commercial success in challenging times. So starting with you, perhaps, Mark, as a leader, how do you set the tone and what advice would you give for achieving that sort of trust between clients and agencies and teams?
I think I think we're really lucky, to be honest, that we have built strong relationships and foundations to come into this time, because it's harder to establish new relationships through Zoom and at this time. And we really have got deep relationships with a lot of our agency partners. That said, we've had some quite difficult conversations with them as well around reviewing the level of work that we're going to have. And actually, at one stage, we probably thought there was going to be less than actually there now is, as we realize that we can do more and also that we need to do more as we respond to consumers. But I think there's something that's really important, therefore, in those relationships, and actually in my teams as well, that leaders need to face reality and give hope, which is something one of my old bosses used to say a great deal. Giving hope's really important. Having a sense of a brighter future and something that people can look forward to and aim towards is critical. But that has to be grounded in reality so that it's not just a sort of naive, hopeful view of the future. It has to start from fully understanding where we are today, but also knowing what we can do to make it better. And actually, if there was one thing that I have found has made our teams, both across the agency and within Diageo, energized, it's starting to do things, feeling like you're making a contribution, feeling like you're bringing some work to consumers that's going to help them to have a treat in their day and get through the day. That sense of face reality, give hope, I think is critical.
Mm. Giving people purpose, right? I think it sounds like. And Rob, what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I love that. That element of, I think now the demands on us as leaders is to help radical change come through. And that's what it demands, that we are necessarily, I think there's a healthy organization, a healthy society is one which says that sort of the brighter days are to come and you're not looking over your shoulder. I think everyone's kind of understood that what we're not trying to do is rebound into something that was. So that element of providing radical sort of a radical vision for it is incredibly important at the moment. And we've seen that, but taking the steps along the way. And I think that came almost when you saw the start of lockdown, where that flurry of energy turned into a flurry of output. And both sort of alongside our partners, but then also internally in my agency around the world, people were starting fitness classes at 7 o'clock in the morning, and they were doing meetups in the evenings, and they're doing book clubs. And one of our teams coded an app to do serendipitous meetups called Chit Chat because they were missing bumping into people. And so I think it is that element of producing things that allow you to move along that process. Fortunately or not fortunately, everything has been sped up. So I think we're seeing things, we're going through cycles far faster. But allowing for that vision, and that vision allows you to take a step along it, take it 6 weeks out, 3 months out, and then sort of setting into 21 and sort of going forward, really, really helps people move along that process. And I think the other side is the fallibility. is making sure that I think leadership comes from saying what you do and don't know. And the sort of the honesty to admit that this is something that you are on a journey with everybody, and that you are garnering their support and their input all the way along this. And we've had, our teams have been incredible about driving that change themselves, and then scaling it around the world and being sort of feeling those connections. And that became incredibly important very quickly. I would be the first one to admit I don't know a lot. Having the team's input to that was made some of those big shifts.
Great stuff. Thank you. So we're running out of time, as we knew we would, but before we come to our sort of final question for you guys, just quickly popping back to the Q&A again. So there's loads of interesting questions on here. Sorry, audience, we'll never get through them all, I'm afraid, but we'll pick them up afterwards. There's a question here from Kerry Flouse, which says, you can read it yourselves, but it's in essence asking about the ecosystem and say, you know, asking you all, do you feel that brands and agencies will now take a wider lens and look to fresh and new parts of the marketing ecosystem to find creative ideas and brand partners to be a part of their mix? Any perspectives on that?
100%. I think that's some of what is the most exciting in that radical change. And like we said, the radical rethinking of a funnel and the way in which people are consuming or not is very, very important for us to grasp. The ecosystem, looking at sort of a metaverse, being able to understand that we are going to be engaging with people sort of inside a gaming environment, and that is as valid a space in which that you're going to be transacting with people and maybe attracting from a talent perspective as it is in physical retail. We've worked in various different ways along that. And I think it is taking that step forward and making sure that you are really well educated and you've got brilliant sort of experienced teams to help think that. You've got experts coming into the business. So not trying to fake it, not trying just to say everybody in these four walls are the only people who can solve this. And having the humility and that curiosity to say in these changes, we mustn't be left behind. So embracing those and making those steps on that journey.
Thanks, Rob. Great answer. One other, just picking up from Anna Harris here, which maybe Lynette, you can pick up, which is, do you think the voice of the customer is now a digital voice? Interesting question.
Well, I think, you know, with the pandemic, it has really underscored the importance of being very clear in the digital space, especially in the social space, your brand voice, what you stand for, so that when they see you, they know, okay, that's Singapore or that's, you know, XYZ brand. But I do believe that for travel, when markets do open up, I do think pre-pandemic, there was a lot of thinking and a lot of work around experience marketing. I do think elements of that will come back. It will take on a different shape and form. I guess what I'm trying to say is, yes, digital is extremely important. We need to have a very clear identity and brand voice and be innovative on social. There's a lot of same, if you know what I mean. But post-pandemic, we need to think how to balance that with the experience on ground, because that's not going to go away. People will still want that pint of beer in that pub. How do you tell your brand story there? So just some thoughts going through my mind and my team's mind.
So keeping balance is going to be important.
Yes.
Good advice. Thank you. So listen, I want to turn just to each of you now, in no more than a minute each, because we're rapidly running out of time, is just, what's the one key piece of advice you'd leave our audience with today if they want to drive greater creative success? So maybe I'll start with you, Mark, on that. One key piece of advice.
My one key piece of advice would be my one big learning from this, which is to listen harder and follow harder what's happening to the consumer, what's happening externally, and be ready to respond. The head of 72andSunny, who are our Smirnoff agency, was saying the other day, you know, we don't need $1 million ad for this. We need 100,000 ads so that we can be ready to respond and be relevant as things change so much. So listen more, respond more, and don't sit in a neat annual plan.
Yeah, love that. Great advice. Lynette?
I guess one piece of advice I would have would be to be open and to embrace working with many, many different creatives out there. It could be, you know, that entrepreneur who just set up a pancake shop, he probably has a very interesting way of telling your brand story. Or, you know, the fledgling skateboarder, he can showcase your destination in a way no one else can. So this is what I mean by creativity can be found in many different delightful places. So I think we need to be open and embrace that.
Love that. Love that. Thank you. Everyone from pancake shops to skateboarders. And Rob?
Yeah, I think it is finding the marriage of experience and youth or naivety. And my concern is, as you look at the dynamics going into a recession, is that typically younger people find it hard to get a job, and you go safer in the way in which you are hiring. And that's understandable. But the necessity at the moment for the radical change we need to drive is it will be the things that we're not seeing. So like Lynette was saying, looking into different places with different people, looking into different corners, and ensuring we see that will come from a different range of voices. So there's going to be a marriage, and then we have to make sure that the next generation of creatives aren't left on a shelf for the next 3-4 years as a pandemic and a recession rips through, but they are the voices that are helping drive that change.
What a great way to end. Listen, these conversations could always go on for at least another hour, and this one's been no exception. So thank you so much. What a brilliant conversation it's been. Some great wisdom and insights have been shared with us there, I think. And we'll collate some of those tips and learnings to share with all of our members over the coming days. So if you've enjoyed today, or if you've not, please let us know on our feedback poll, which we always have. It will be appearing on your screens in a moment. I just need to get rid of mine so I can see what I've got to say. So please fill that in. Let us know what you think. Just quickly, what's next from us and the Marketing Society? We've always got lots going on. So next Tuesday, the 8th of September at 12 o'clock, British Summer Time, we're hosting a webinar discussing the impact of COVID-19 on consumer attitudes to digital payments. And the following week, on Thursday, the 17th of September at 10 a.m. BST, we're hosting a virtual Under the Spotlight session with the former CMO of Netflix, Jacqueline Lee Joe. So that will be fascinating. So please join us for those. They're available to book online now, and I hope to see you there. So thank you to all of our panelists. Thank you to our audience for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure to host this session. And go off and enjoy the rest of your days, and stay safe. Thanks.